Our election coverage continues with the race for a pivotal seat in the Wisconsin Senate.
We made the effort to find those issues of shared concern where there was common ground, things that were close to home.
During my time in the State Assembly, I focused my efforts on bringing awareness to the challenges that we face here in rural northern Wisconsin.
Candidates Romaine Quinn and Kelly Westland debate the issues. Welcome to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington, and our debates and candidate interviews for the November election continue. This week, we're looking at the open seat for Wisconsin's 25th Senate District, covering much of our listening area from Ashland to the Rice Lake area, which happen to be the homes of our two guests and candidates. They're vying to replace Democratic Senator Janet Bewley, who is retiring from the seat and who is the outgoing Senate Minority Leader. On the Democratic side is Kelly Westland. She lives in Ashland and was, until announcing her candidacy, the Northwest Regional Representative for U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin. She grew up in a military family and is a graduate of Northland College. She worked for the nonprofit Alliance for Sustainability and is a small business owner. She and her husband Caleb are heads of an extended blended family. On the Republican side is Romaine Quinn of the town of Cameron, not far from Rice Lake. She and her husband Caleb are heads of an extended blended family. On the Republican side is Romaine Quinn of the town of Cameron, not far from Rice Lake. He's a former mayor of Rice Lake and at 19 was the youngest person elected to that job. He followed that, serving three terms in the Assembly, representing the 75th District from 2015 to 2021. He's a graduate of the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire and worked for the local Coca-Cola bottler. He and his wife Raquel have a young son and another on the way and currently live just outside of Cameron. Both candidates will be allowed an opening statement, followed by the debate in which they'll each be asked the same questions and given a chance to rebut each other. With that, welcome to Simply Superior, Romaine Quinn and Kelly Westland.
Thank you, Robin.
Thanks, Robin.
So let's begin. Each of you will have a 2-minute opening statement, beginning with Kelly Westland.
All right. Well, thank you again, Robin, for having us on. We very much appreciate the opportunity to talk with constituents throughout the 25th State Senate District. Just to give a little additional background, I'd like to make sure that folks know that lines did change for this election, and the district now includes all of Price County, Iron County, Ashland, Bayfield, Douglas, Washburn, Barron, and Burnett, along with a couple of townships in Sawyer County and just the tiniest bit of Turtle Lake in Polk County. So the areas that included Lac du Flambeau the last time around are no longer a part of the 25th. What this means for us is that the demographics have shifted a little bit, and it is really a toss-up race. I'm glad to be in the running for this seat. I think that it's really important that Northern Wisconsin have a strong representative in Madison, especially being the largest Senate district in the state, the furthest away from Madison. Sometimes it feels difficult to make sure that our voices are heard and our best interests being well represented. As you said in the introduction, I've spent the last 7 years working for Senator Baldwin's office as her Northern representative. And in that time, I had a lot of really valuable opportunities to learn about the issues of concern in various corners of this district and to play some role in addressing many of those, whether it was helping to make sure that individual constituents got access to their earned benefits or helping municipal governments find federal dollars to address much needed issues of concern. Like, for example, buying a new ambulance for the Glidden Area Emergency Services when they had to reform service after losing their provider in Ashland County. So that was a great opportunity to do some of that work. Those are skills that I intend to bring with me to the State Senate. And I can tell you that part of the reason why Senator Baldwin's office is sort of the outlier in terms of Democrats who are popular in rural communities is because, even in the minority, we made the effort to find those issues of shared concern where there was common ground, things that were close to home. And whether it was helping folks that work in agriculture or timber and forestry, there were good opportunities for us to make positive change in the lives of our constituents. I also am a former city councilor from the city of Ashland. And in that time, I got to learn a lot about issues facing local communities and how much of a challenge it's been given the levy limits and the declining shared revenues for our municipalities to make ends meet. What we see with these very strict levy limits and declining shared revenues is that oftentimes our local governments are forced to cut services or lay off staff or defer much needed maintenance on our infrastructure or borrow. And none of those things are sustainable. When I go to the state legislature, I want to focus primarily on restoring local decision-making power. I want to focus on investing in our public education system, our infrastructure, extending broadband, and making healthcare and the cost of living more affordable for Northern Wisconsin families.
Thank you, Kelly Westland. And now your opening statement, Romaine Quinn.
Yes, good morning again. And thank you so much, Robin, for having both Kelly and I on the air today. And thank you for your listeners, no matter where you are, for tuning in. I also want to thank Kelly for joining as well. I think it's so important that voters are able to hear from candidates before an election so that they can make an educated decision as to who they want to best represent them after November. So as you mentioned, a little bit of my background, I was born and raised right here in Northern Wisconsin, and my family has deep roots dating back multiple generations from farming to owning small businesses. My family has been part of building many communities here in the 25th Senate District. So I have also personally spent nearly my entire adult life serving others and the communities that we all call home. So from being elected on city council during my time in high school, as you mentioned, I served as mayor of Rice Lake when I was 19, or my time in the legislature in the state assembly for 6 years, I have always worked hard to make sure that we remain a great place to live, work, and play. And during my time in the state assembly, I focused my efforts on bringing awareness to the challenges that uniquely we face here in rural Northern Wisconsin, which is why I helped found the Rural Wisconsin Initiative, which was an effort to bring both Democrats and Republicans together on issues that uniquely affect rural Wisconsin and that weren't partisan. So issues such as broadband expansion or supporting our small rural schools or expanding healthcare and infrastructure to our most remote families. And that should be something that we can all support. And I'm happy to say that during my time in the legislature, we accomplished a lot. And which is why I also believe this sets me apart from my competition, is I not only talk about what I would like to do, but I can point to what I've already accomplished and the fact that I know how to get the job done. And I look forward to using my past experience and relationships that I already have in the legislature to be as effective as I possibly can for those of us here in Northwestern Wisconsin.
All right. Thank you, Romaine Quinn. And now the questions, beginning with Kelly Westland. How do we keep our schools and communities safe in the wake of recent deadly shootings? And how can this be accomplished while balancing Second Amendment rights?
Sure. Thank you for the question, Robin. I think that there are a lot of measures that we can take, especially when we look to places where this has already been done. But specifically when it comes to access to firearms, I think that there's a lot of support from constituents across Wisconsin, across the nation, for basic measures like universal background checks. I can tell you, it's funny that this is the first question for me today, just because it happened to be the anniversary of my sister's death 6 years ago. And she was somebody who died on the business end of a 9mm. And I can tell you that part of the issue is that some people shouldn't have access to firearms, frankly. And my opponent, one of the first bills that he introduced and passed into law in Wisconsin was doing away with the 48-hour waiting period for handguns, just like the one that killed my sister. I think that if we are going to talk about support for law enforcement in this country, then one of the main things that we need to do is to take this issue of gun violence seriously. We have to make sure that mental health is actually being addressed and not just sort of discussed for headlines following one of these mass shootings. We've got to make sure that we are taking care to teach folks how to use firearms safely. Hunter safety, responsible use is critically important. I don't think that it's fair to our kids in school to not only fear the possibility of one of these school shootings, but to actually live with the expectation that it's bound to happen eventually. It just breaks my heart. School should be a safe place for kids to go and to learn. And if we really want to support our law enforcement, then I think universal background checks is a pretty good place to start. I'm a gun owner myself. My husband hunts. I have a firearm. We are people that use these. And I know that it's a deep part of the tradition of Northern Wisconsin to engage in the use of firearms. I'm not coming to take anybody's guns, But like every other constitutional right, there are protections in place. There have to be some fences. You can't own a nuclear weapon because you have a right to bear arms. We've got to have some reasonable discussions. And I think that there is bipartisan support for these measures, regardless of what the NRA says and what the legislators acting on their behalf are doing.
All right. Romaine Quinn, same question, and I'll repeat it. How do we keep our schools and communities safe in the wake of recent deadly shootings? And how can this be accomplished while balancing Second Amendment rights?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it you hit the nail on the head. It's finding that balance, because we know that here in northern Wisconsin, our geography and our culture is very unique when it comes to the ownership and usage of firearms. You know, they're not just firearms, they're tools that we use, many of us, in our daily lives. So our lives are much different than those in Brookfield or other parts of the state where they view guns in a different light. So it's so important to have legislators that can thread that needle and make colleagues understand when you make statewide policy for Madison, it has to make sense for us too. So when I was in the state assembly, I voted to create the Office of School Safety within the Department of Justice. So the OSS, as the acronym, is tasked with creating statewide guidance and standards and funding for schools to make sure that our kids are safe, which also included $100 million to make sure that no matter what zip code your child goes to school in, that building is as safe as it possibly can be. It's sad for many years, you know, our doors were left open. There was not much for security because we lived in these small towns and communities that make us unique, and those days are gone. We have to make sure schools have the tools they need to keep those kiddos as safe as they can be while on school grounds. And we know that the Office of School Safety, when it was created, has been supported by both parties. And we just heard recently, even from Attorney General Josh Call, that, you know, they've received their 4,000th tip in the Speak Up, Speak Out program, trying to identify kids or other people with issues before they get to a point where they're trying to harm themselves or others. And I agree with Kelly. We absolutely need to expand mental health care options in rural and northern Wisconsin. It's already hard in metropolitan parts of the state. We don't have the practitioners. And now when you take into account the low Medicaid reimbursement rates for those providers, they don't want to practice or can't afford to practice in northern Wisconsin, which is why we saw a mental health facility just in Cumberland close just a few years back here in Barron County. So getting people the resources they need before they harm themselves or others is extremely important. And again, going back to the question about balance, we also need to protect our Second Amendment rights. I don't know if anyone that's asking to own a nuclear weapon. But when I was in the assembly, I can tell you first and foremost that Democrats were constantly chipping away at your right to keep firearms. There's no doubt about it. And I will say that I am proud to be endorsed by the National Rifle Association. I think they've been a leader on the front of defending our Second Amendment rights. And if we are truly in the middle of the road on some of these issues, which, you know, Kelly mentions, I just want to let the listeners know she received an F grade. So not a C, not a D or a B, but an F. So I think there's a big difference between us, because I think we both agree on supporting mental health supports for those in crisis. But we can also do that while supporting our rights to keep and bear arms. And we'll make just one note on the 48-hour waiting period, because we are so unique here in northern Wisconsin. Imagine a situation where someone is in a domestic violence situation, and they are to the point where they feel like they need a firearm to defend themselves from their spouse. And we hope to God no one ever faces that. But now imagine going to the store and purchasing that firearm because you believe your safety is at imminent risk. And you are told, sorry, you passed the background check, come back in 2 days and pick it up later. So that's what that bill was about. And I think we need to, again, realize that our geography, our culture, we are much different here in northern Wisconsin. And finding that balance is key.
Kelly Westland, any rebuttal to that?
Yeah, I would say that, you know, it's funny that the Speak Up, Speak Out is something that has been useful for schools. And yet there has been a disinclination in other venues to consider past behavior in terms of access to a firearm. I spoke with a constituent who told me that he had experienced a mental health crisis himself. And he's in a better place now in therapy and medicated and doing well. But he knows that he has bouts of depression, and access to a firearm that he could purchase immediately would put his life at risk. He wants to voluntarily join a list that would require a review before he could access that kind of weapon, and he's not alone. I know that my opponent has mentioned, you know, my F rating from the NRA, but I don't think that necessarily the scale is quite fair, given that I never took a questionnaire from the NRA. So I'm guessing that that's graded on a pass-fail kind of situation. And in my mind, the NRA is less of an advocacy group for actual citizens, because if they were, they would represent that majority opinion that we should have universal background checks. And instead, they're more of a lobbying organization for gun manufacturers. On the 48-hour waiting period, Mr. Quinn says that it was for the victims of domestic violence. But the issue is that that's a two-sided coin, right? It means that if you've got a violent spouse or partner who is committing, you know, the domestic violence, then these are the folks that can also walk into the store and walk out with a handgun in a moment of, of stress in the relationship. So I think that, if there's somebody who is in fear for their own safety, then they should be contacting law enforcement for protection and taking other measures rather than going to purchase a firearm, trying to introduce that to the situation that's already volatile with some sense of immediacy. I don't think that that bill really took into consideration the perspective of, the people that were on the receiving end of that violence.
Romaine Quinn, any rebuttal to the rebuttal?
Yeah, I know there's a lot to unpack with this issue. And again, proud support of the Second Amendment. I think there are areas we can come together on to make sure that those who have an intent on harming others or themselves are unable to get their hands on those firearms, which is why in office I also supported upping penalties for straw purchases. So we're not having people sell guns to those who knowingly can't own them, trying to crack down on those illegal sales to make sure that we can keep our community as safe as they possibly can be. And I'll just mention, if she didn't take the survey, that's fine. She could have reached out. We both had an opportunity to take the survey from the NRA. And then I believe we both should take that, so people know exactly where we are at on those most pressing issues, Second Amendment right issues facing us today.
All right, and let's move on. Enbridge's Line 5 project promises to bring economic development to the area, including 700 jobs, but is opposed by environmental groups and American Indian tribes who say any spill will irreparably harm the Lake Superior watershed, which would also impede treaty rights, fishing, and ricing. How do you balance these competing concerns? This time, beginning with Romaine Quinn.
Yeah, thanks for the question. Energy policy right now, both nationally and locally, is super important as we see these prices skyrocket. I was just in Park Falls yesterday. Gas is once again above $4 a gallon. My wife and I just realized we missed the opportunity to pre-buy propane for our own home, and we are spending twice as much this year to heat our home this winter, over $1,000 more than we just paid last year. And that's money that we just didn't plan or budget for, because how are you supposed to know that? And so having sustainable infrastructure to know that there is a continuous supply of energy is an important piece of making sure our markets can handle any kind of fluctuation. I think Enbridge is doing the right thing by moving the line. I think we should respect Native American rights and their treaties, and by moving this pipeline off of their native lands, which is what they requested, which is what Enbridge is doing. So if you look, it's 545,000 barrels of crude oil and natural gas that line shuffles through each day. And that's an incredible amount of energy, not only significant for our area, but for our region and even nationally. So I think it's important that we get this redone. We get the old 60-year-old pipe out of the ground. We put the latest and greatest technology back into the ground to make sure we have that consistent supply, especially during an energy crunch, which we're seeing today. And again, I'll just say that, what is the alternative? I mean, we could close every pipeline down. It doesn't mean we're going to use any less. It just means those fuels are going to be placed on a truck or on rail and shipped just a different method, which we know is both more costly and not as safe. So I know we're transitioning to renewables. I support renewable energy. We are getting there. It's coming. But we still need the sustainable fossil fuels to make sure that we have the energy today while we make that transition.
Thank you, Romaine Quinn. Kelly Westland, same question, and I'll repeat it. Enbridge's Line 5 project promises to bring economic development to the area, including 700 jobs, but it's opposed by environmental groups and American Indian tribes who say that any spill will irreparably harm the Lake Superior watershed, which would also impede treaty rights, fishing, and ricing. How do you balance these competing concerns?
Sure. It is. You're correct in that it's a complicated issue. So I've been having a lot of conversations with people about this for some time living in Ashland. And there are a few things to consider, right? First of all, Enbridge has alternative routes that they could use to move this product. There's a whole separate line system that runs from the same origin to the same terminal at the very end. And I'm still not entirely clear on why they haven't chosen to take that other route. Secondly, the jobs that you're talking about, yes, they are good jobs. And I'm glad that Enbridge took the time to get a project labor agreement. However, if you have, gone out into the world at all recently, you know that everyone is having a hard time hiring. You might also know that specifically in the construction trades, there are two jobs available for every one person. So the folks that would be working on that line aren't going to go without work if this reroute doesn't happen. They'll be just, working on other things, filling those other jobs that are available at this moment. I know that, we can't flip a switch and get off of fossil fuels tomorrow, but I think that we have to actually start taking more meaningful steps toward transitioning to more sustainable, renewable energy options. The line itself is owned and operated by a foreign company that has essentially run all of the risk of a spill through northern Wisconsin rather than through Canada, where their own citizens would be negatively impacted should something go wrong. We've also seen that even recently there was a spill located near Ashland. This is an old piece of infrastructure, and though Enbridge is finally, after a long drawn out legal fight, willing to move this line off of reservation boundaries, fact is, the way that they're rerouting it would now, instead of putting part of the reservation waters at risk, it's now going to completely surround the reservation and put the entire watershed at risk, which is something that is, deeply opposed by the tribe. And I don't know that Enbridge has really been good about engaging them in meaningful conversation. And they still have, I believe it's over 175 water bodies that they would have to get permits to cross in order to make this operational. Not to mention that at the same time, they're facing challenges from the tribe. There are also challenges on the same line over in Michigan, where they are proposing to put a tunnel under the Straits of Mackinac. So even if they were to move forward with this reroute expansion project, there's no guarantee that they're going to be able to complete this line in Michigan, and that's out of our hands. And the final point that I'd like to make is that the fuel that is moving through the Enbridge pipeline is not being used for the most part in the United States. It's less than 3% that goes toward propane in Michigan. It's not something that is actively benefiting the people of Wisconsin or reducing our energy costs. And really, if we were more proactive about shifting to priorities like weatherization, energy conservation, and renewable energy sources, then there would be fewer folks having to worry about the constant global fluctuations in fuel prices when it comes to planning their household budgets.
All right. Thank you. Any rebuttal to that, Romaine Quinn?
Yeah, I guess I'm just having a hard time understanding that we don't want more jobs in our district because there's already enough jobs. Like, does that mean we don't want other employers coming to Superior or Ashland because people are already working at an existing job? I didn't even mention the economic impact of Line 5, having those union construction jobs, which many people in this district work for. I have a lot of family and friends that are not college educated that came out of high school and worked the pipeline, and they live a higher than middle class living right now because of the opportunities of working in the energy industry. So again, we need safe, reliable, consistent energy. Pipelines are still by far the safest way to transfer that energy. And whether it is impacting our regional supply, whether we talk about the millions of dollars the city of Superior gets through its terminal tax, this absolutely does impact our supply here in northern Wisconsin. We can't operate in a vacuum, right? If there's a supply shortage in Iowa or other places, that absolutely impacts our supply of fuels here. It wasn't that long ago when propane went through the roof. And if you call our suppliers like Synergy Cooperative here in Barron County and Washburn County, which I've talked to, any disruption in any supply anywhere near here in this region absolutely impacts prices, and our families cannot afford any more increases than we're already seeing today.
Kelly Westland, any rebuttal to the rebuttal?
Yeah, I'd just like to make sure that it's very clear. I didn't say that we don't need more jobs. I'm all for economic development in northern Wisconsin, and I'm glad that there are so many creative entrepreneurs that are finding success in lots of creative ways and unexpected places. What I said is that we already have difficulty hiring for the positions that are open. I'm not entirely convinced that we can fill all of those slots to be able to do the work in accordance with the project labor agreement. The other thing is, yes, the economic impact of the Enbridge terminal in Superior is something that has been there for a long time that folks in that community rely on. And that won't change. Even if Enbridge were to shift the shipping of this product through their alternative routes, through their alternative network, that terminal in Superior is going to continue operating as it does. I also just wanted to say that, yes, we do have this entire, you know, supply chain issue, but we've seen it in lots of ways through the course of the pandemic, not just related to fuel. What we learned is that maybe we need to start doing things a little closer to home, whether it's, you know, manufacturing goods that we need to make things here in Wisconsin, or whether it's where our energy comes from. And the best way to do distributed energy sources is with renewable energy. We know that fossil fuels are finite. We know that they are held at the whims of world powers that can, you know, whether it's Russia going to war in Ukraine or the folks at OPEC deciding to limit supply to the rest of the world market. There are lots of impacts that are out of our control, and we've got to find alternative options that actually improve national security and help to control costs for consumers.
All right. Thank you both. And moving on. With this reversal of Roe versus Wade, the United States Supreme Court returned the abortion issue to the states. What role do you think the Wisconsin legislature should have regarding abortion, especially given our area's proximity to Minnesota, where it remains legal? And this time we'll begin with you, Kelly Westland.
Sure. So this is one of the critical issues that I have been hearing a lot on the doors. It's even one of the issues that has led some otherwise conservative or Republican-leaning folks to reconsider, especially women, their votes this coming November. What is the issue at hand, of course, is that Wisconsin is currently operating under a law from 1849. That law was put into place before women had the right to vote. So, and we don't have a majority in the state legislature right now that, you know, seems all that concerned with the rights of women, frankly. And I've heard from people who have already experienced some of the unintended consequences of leaving Wisconsin to operate under this, you know, 150-some-year-old law, right? That is that if you look in a medical textbook and it describes a miscarriage, for example, as a spontaneous abortion, then that means that doctors right now in Wisconsin have some apprehension, the possibility of being charged with a felony to provide necessary standard medical care to women who are experiencing a miscarriage through no fault of their own. And when you're experiencing something like that, it's already traumatic, but to have, you know, a group of legislators that are maintaining this as the status quo when they could be more active about returning that personal freedom, that personal choice to women, it's really frustrating for a lot of people. And you're correct in that Minnesota will continue to keep abortion legal and that people can cross state lines. But what we've seen is, you know, a number of bills that Governor Evers has vetoed that would further criminalize women for doing things like going to another place to seek an abortion. And I think personally that that's a big problem. I know that this is a motivating issue for a lot of women, but it speaks to many, many things, whether it's the personal freedom, access to necessary medical care, or even your own economic opportunity, your personal health care choices. This is one of those defining issues in this election. Absolutely.
Same question to you, Romaine Quinn, and I'll repeat it. With this reversal of Roe versus Wade, the United States Supreme Court returned the abortion issue to the state. What role do you think the Wisconsin legislature should have regarding abortion, especially given our area's proximity to Minnesota, where it remains legal?
So I'll start by saying that there are a lot of deeply held beliefs on both sides of this issue. And I wish both sides would take a moment to try and empathize and understand the very personal and intimate situations that women and families find themselves in during an unexpected or an unwanted or even a complicated pregnancy. Now, that being said, I've always been pro-life, which is no secret. So when I was in the state assembly, I voted for a 20-week abortion ban, which included exceptions for the life and health of the mother. It's sad that something that reasonable, banning abortions after 5 months of pregnancy, could not garner one single Democrat vote in Madison at the time. And to me, that seems very extreme. So, but I do believe the state must step up and do a better job of supporting mothers during their time of need. So we could look at expanding Medicaid to postpartum care, tax credits for babies that are still in the womb, making it easier for families to foster or adopt kids. It's incredibly expensive. Some of my family have tried to go through it. Incredibly expensive to adopt kids in the state and in this country, which is just a shame. So I'm not just pro-birth, as some like to say. I'm pro-life, I'm pro-baby, I'm pro-mother, which is why I support organizations like the Pregnancy Help Center of Rice Lake, both personally and through my work with the Knights of Columbus. So right in Rice Lake, a pregnant mother has the ability to have her child and live for free for 3 years at a home provided by this resource center where she can be safe and build a life to support her and her new baby. And I think that's the kind of work we need to be spreading all across Wisconsin, especially in our rural areas.
All right. Kelly Westland, rebuttal to that?
Sure. I can appreciate the sentiment that both sides need to take a moment to consider and empathize with people who feel differently than them on this issue. However, my opponent's not just pro-life. He is, you know, somebody who's talked about the moment of conception being when life begins. And for a lot of folks, that's an issue, partly because, yes, they're not aware. And with a 20-week ban that included some of the exceptions like rape, incest, but health of the mother, that's not the case under the 1849 law that is in effect in Wisconsin right now. However, a 20-week ban doesn't allow for some of the, again, very traumatic personal situations that I've heard stories about firsthand. People who wait longer than 5 months, it's usually because they planned for that child. They want it. They're welcoming that child. They have, you know, maybe even set up their nursery, and then something goes catastrophically wrong. They find out that there is a fatal abnormality, and they have to make a decision whether they're going to follow through and go through the mental anguish that would ensue with the remaining 4 months of carrying a child that they know will not survive. It's something that I don't think should be up to people in the legislature, particularly the Republican Party. I think that it's something that should be left to the individual and whoever she trusts to help her make that decision, whether it's her doctor, her partner, her priest, what have you. I also have some concern about one of the bills that Mr. Quinn introduced when he was in the state legislature that would have given $500,000 a year to crisis pregnancy centers without any kind of accountability or competitive bidding for or application process for grant money. That's taxpayer dollars to go to some of these organizations that have a track record of being disingenuous, of being deceitful to women, talking about what their options are when they're exploring, you know, the things that are available to them in terms of healthcare with an unwanted or, you know, unexpected pregnancy.
Okay. Romaine Quinn, rebuttal to the rebuttal.
Yeah, I think it's sad that we can give millions of dollars to just Planned Parenthood, but I try to offer $500,000 to pregnancy crisis centers across the state, and then somehow that's an issue. I think there are alternatives that can be offered. You know, I've knocked thousands of doors myself this campaign, not just staff or paid outside third-party groups, and I have never heard one person say, whether they're pro-life or pro-choice, that there should be zero restrictions, right? There has to be something on the books. So when we just say, leave it up to the mother and the doctor, that's code for nothing on the books. And I don't think most people fall into that category. And when we talk about complications in pregnancy, I think the bigger concern right now for women is the lack of OBGYN care across rural Wisconsin. I saw this myself. My wife and I are due with our second child again in December. And the Barron OB department just closed down. And so if there is a complication and we're in northern Washburn County, we have to drive an hour and a half to deliver that child. So I think having the lack of access and care of specialists and those who deliver babies on a regular basis in rural Wisconsin is definitely an important issue that we also need to continue to address during this conversation.
Again, thank you both. A study this summer by the private research group Wallet Hub found Wisconsin on the bottom of states when it comes to civic participation by race, meaning African Americans are less likely to engage in civic activities than white Wisconsinites. That comes after numerous other studies showing the state to be at or near last in racial disparities in various quality of life areas. What can a legislature do to address this inequity, and what can you do personally? And this time, we'll begin with Romaine Quinn.
So we are the farthest district from Madison possible, and it's no secret that, you know, northern Wisconsin continues to remain very white, right? There's not a lot of minority presence here in our district. And so I'm not going to pretend to know or can fully appreciate the life and situations that members of our African American community face, maybe in Milwaukee or other parts of the state. So I guess I would lean on legislators from other parts of the state and those in those communities to guide us in our decisions to try and improve those outcomes. You know, a lot of that starts even in schools. Part of the reason I'm supportive of school choice is we are giving inner city minority kids an opportunity to get an education that they otherwise their parents could not afford. And that was the whole reason behind school choice in the first place. So whether we talk about educational outcomes or healthcare outcomes, I think creating more opportunities for families, minority families across the state is important.
All right. Kelly Westland, same question, which I will repeat. A study this summer by the private research group Wallet Hub found Wisconsin to be at the bottom of states when it comes to civic participation by race, meaning African Americans are less likely to engage in civic activities than white Wisconsinites. That comes after numerous other studies show the state to be at or near last in racial disparities in various quality of life issues. What can a legislature do to address this inequity, and what can you do personally?
So first I want to address the makeup of the 25th Senate District, and Mr. Quinn's correct that it is majority white. However, it is also still home to significant populations of Indigenous people, mostly Ojibwe tribes in St. Croix, Red Cliff, and Bad River, as well as some other folks that live in spaces in between. We also have a large Somali community in Bering County, and there are, folks that deserve to have a say, absolutely, who don't feel well represented by the majority in the state legislature. One of the things that I have committed to doing here as part of this, I understand perspective matters, right? Context matters. There are times when policy has unintended consequences, specifically on underrepresented groups that often, and in the past, we've got tons of historical context here, that puts them at an active disadvantage, maybe actively even harms communities. And so one of the commitments that I've made is to form what I'm thinking of as a district advisory council to invite folks who have those different perspectives, who come from those communities, who can help weigh in on significant policy issues and even be the voice at the table that says, nobody there is really representing my best interest about this specific thing. I think that's important in terms of building a bench of leadership from underrepresented communities, but also making sure that, my personal perspective as a middle-class white woman isn't influencing all of the policies that I think have value. Instead, I want to actually, generally, I found that when somebody has an issue with the way that government treats their community, they're also the ones that you should be going to find the solutions. Bring them to the table and ask what they think. And that's not what is happening enough, especially in districts that are represented, generally speaking, by majority white folks. So there's a lot of room for improvement.
All right. Romaine Quinn, any rebuttal to that?
Yeah, I think Kelly's absolutely right. We should absolutely be including more of these voices in the decision-making process. It jogged my memory. Some of the most meaningful conversations I've had when I was in the state assembly was bringing Congressman Duffy's staff down to Barron and listening to the Somali families who have children still stuck in the bureaucracy and the red tape that they've been struggling for years to get them over to Barron, where they can create that life that is stable and safe, that I think everyone wants, regardless of your background. So these are absolutely important conversations to have and to include even those that are marginalized in our communities.
And Kelly Westland, any rebuttal to rebuttal?
I would just agree. When I served as Senator Baldwin's regional representative, I also spent time listening to the stories of those families, and they're absolutely heartbreaking. I think that right now we're seeing nationwide some, what I would describe as racist attacks on folks that are coming to this country seeking a better life. Mr. DeSantis's, hope or like his stunt of flying immigrants to Martha's Vineyard, I mean, that's probably fine for him in the polls, but those were folks that are seeking asylum who came to ports of entry. They're using the legal system of immigration to try to find a better life and a safer place to be. What we're seeing in northern Wisconsin is an aging and declining in terms of population community. We are getting older and we're getting, less and less population dense. And if we are going to, revitalize our public schools and fill all of those open jobs, we need to find ways to be more welcoming and inclusive of communities that look different than us.
Thank you much. And moving on, two more questions. The economy and inflation in particular are top of mind for many families. The federal government has passed the Inflation Reduction Act, and we've seen gas prices go down significantly from the summer, but they're creeping back up again, at least this week. What can the legislature do to curb rising prices? And this time we'll begin with Kelly Westland.
Well, I think the first thing that the legislature could do is actually meet. We've got what is viewed as one of the least productive full-time legislatures in the country. And this year, they met for the last time the first week of March, and they have no plans to reconvene until after the election. In my mind, when you have a full-time job, you should be actually doing that job a little more often. And Governor Evers has made multiple proposals about things that we can do to begin to address this and to help lift up families that are struggling to make ends meet. And so far, what we've seen from the Republican majority in the state legislature is that they show up and then they gavel in and then they gavel out. Usually it takes less than a minute. They collect their mileage checks and they go home. That's not actually serving people. But there are things that we can do. The state has a record surplus that we could be returning, putting those dollars back into people's pockets. We could expand Badger Care to make sure that folks have more affordable access to healthcare wherever they are. We can continue the universal free school lunch program because we know that it works for a variety of reasons and ultimately ends up saving money for school districts and parents who are trying to figure out how they're going to get back into paying that when they haven't had to throughout the course of COVID. There are many, many investments that Governor Evers has made with the federal dollars to communities that he's had to, you know, do those things in the absence of any support from the legislature simply because they have not met. We've got to find ways to make sure that, you know, the cost of living is more affordable for families until this inflation starts to level out and the Inflation Reduction Act starts to make bigger impacts more than a month into it.
Robane Quinn, same question, which I'll repeat. The economy and inflation in particular are top of mind for many families. The federal government has passed the Inflation Reduction Act, and we've seen gas prices go down significantly from the summer, but they're creeping back up again, at least this week. What can the legislature do to curb rising prices?
Thanks, Robin. And unfortunately, there's not a whole lot the state itself can do to curb the national inflation crisis that we're seeing. A good start would be for Washington to stop spending money they don't have. And what we see them doing is continuing to throw gasoline on the fire and then wondering why it keeps getting bigger or worse, which we see month after month, inflation continues to shatter records. You know, we need to make life more affordable for people. And again, that goes back to the question earlier. Supporting common sense energy prices, all the above, or energy policies, sorry, and all the above approach to make sure we can afford those basic necessities of heating our homes come this winter. I agree with Kelly. We have a surplus. The government took more money than they needed to fund their operations. So why are we not giving it back to people? We should absolutely try to give them more money in their own pocket to be able to afford the groceries and the gas in their van, trying to get back and forth to work. Because we know in rural Wisconsin, we drive further than any other segment of the population. So those rising gas prices that you mentioned, which have topped $4 a gallon again, uniquely hurt us even more than other parts of the state. And when we talk about the investments in our communities, yes, it's great. The Governor Evers has taken a notice of rural Wisconsin, but you know, dropping $3 million on a YMCA in Park Falls does not lower the cost of living for Northern Wisconsinites. So continuing to try and support our small businesses, lowering prices, putting more money in your pocket since we took too much from you in the first place is a good start for the legislature.
Thank you, Romaine Quinn. Kelly Westland, any rebuttal to that?
Sure. We can't make any of these improvements for people's lives if the legislature doesn't meet to take up these issues. And there are some other things that we can do that Governor Evers has proposed, things like capping certain prescription drug prices and waiving the gas tax with a suspension until we can get some things closer to a reasonable price. When Mr. Quinn talks about not spending money that they don't have, I assume that he's talking about all of the investments that came through COVID. And in my mind, I'm not sure that that fully tracks with how he's behaved, because while he was employed still full-time on taxpayer dollars in the legislature, he also worked full-time as a realtor and yet took a PPP loan and got forgiveness. And then once that free money is in his pocket, he says that it's contributing to inflation. I don't think it's fair to criticize other people who have benefited from some of these programs when you're doing it yourself. And returning the money to people, absolutely, we should be doing more of that. And I'm glad that Governor Evers has taken the initiative to invest in many, many Main Street small businesses with the Badger Bounce Back Program because he wasn't able to lean on the legislature to actually do that work.
Romaine Quinn, any rebuttal to the rebuttal?
Yeah, I guess I'm not going to apologize for working hard to support my family, both in and outside the legislature. Many of us here in northern Wisconsin work multiple jobs to get by when it's uniquely hard to survive up here. We can find a lot of ways to work together on this. It doesn't have to be partisan. And my reference about throwing gas in the fire was passing another $750 billion bill when the federal government's already broke. Again, that is throwing gas on the fire with this recent Inflation Reduction Act. Solutions are there. I think they're bipartisan. I think we can come together. You know, referencing Governor Evers waiving of the gas tax, what does that do? That just sends our transportation budget into the hole, which again requires us to borrow more to keep up with projects that we already can't keep up with. So some of those things aren't solutions, but I don't think this has to be partisan. I think both Kelly and I do care about families that are struggling, and I think there are ways both Democrats and Republicans can come together to try to put more money back in their pockets to try and weather this inflation crisis that we're seeing.
And thank you, Romaine Quinn. And perhaps that leads right to the final question, which is, many, if not most, voters are frustrated by gridlock and political parties refusing to work with one another. What's a cause dear to your opponent's party that you would be willing to embrace?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think people are frustrated. And I think this is more happening in Washington, D.C., where each side plays the gotcha game, throws poison pills in bills, and then says the other one didn't vote for it. And that just doesn't happen as often in Madison. And I hope that stays that way. When I was in the state assembly, over 90% of the bills we passed, even under Governor Scott Walker, were bipartisan. No, that's not flashy. It's not sexy. It doesn't sell newspapers. But a lot of us really did get along, and we really worked hard to try to move the ball in the right direction, especially on issues that matter up north. I think an area of agreement that both Kelly and I have talked about, and I've worked on the legislature, is broadband expansion. I view broadband as infrastructure. Some of my colleagues didn't. And so I worked with Senator Howard Markline, and we rewrote the program. And we expanded a program that was spending $500,000 a year. And when I left office, it was spending $20 million a year trying to get broadband and connectivity to the farthest reaches of the most rural areas of our district to ensure that no matter where we are, we can be competitive, we can be successful, because we know that broadband impacts not just internet surfing and watching the news. It's healthcare related, it's education related, it's economic development. So I think expanding access to broadband and that connectivity in northern Wisconsin in the 25th Senate District is something that both parties can definitely work together on.
All right, thank you. And Kelly Westland, same question. Many, if not most, voters are frustrated by gridlock and political parties refusing to work with one another. What's a cause dear to your opponent's party that you would be willing to embrace?
Sure. So let me start by saying that, my degree is in conflict resolution. I grew up in a Republican family, a military family, and I know that there are areas where we can come together. However, what we've seen is such egregious partisan gerrymandering that there are, close to half of Wisconsin, people in every corner that don't feel as though their voice is actually being heard in our democracy. In fact, in the most recent legislature, it was less than 2% of Democratic bills that even got a hearing. It's something where Republicans who want to work across the aisle are punished for that behavior. I don't think that's healthy. I don't think that that is actually representing or serving the people. I agree. Broadband expansion is a great example of infrastructure investment that everyone can agree on. I think also that in Wisconsin, there are some things that are wildly popular, at least among constituencies in both parties, even if they're not actually seeing action in the legislature, one of which is nonpartisan redistricting reform, also the expansion of Badger Care. Both of those things are actually pretty popular because people understand that that's a federal investment in our rural communities that needs to go further. There are folks up here that do hard work every single day, but if they can't get access to the internet, for example, then they can't build their business, they can't educate their kids, they can't attend medical appointments across the distance. And those things really matter. They affect people. Nonpartisan redistricting reform, people in this country, they care about freedom and democracy and fairness And it just leaves a bad taste in your mouth when you realize that the lines are drawn in a specific intentional way to try to make sure that none of these districts are fair. That's not healthy for democracy, and it really doesn't serve people, which in my mind is the function of government.
All right. Romaine Quinn, any rebuttal?
No, I don't think so.
And I'm going to take that as one small step closer to the parties not fighting and carrying on with each
you
other.
Bet.
So thank you very much, both of you, for that. And with that, we've been speaking with Romaine Quinn of Cameron and Kelly Westland of Ashland. They're candidates for the 25th district seat in the Wisconsin State Senate in November. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you both.